Our speaker tonight is Tad D. from Spring Cities Group. Have a lovely night.
Good evening. My name's Tad. I'm an alcoholic. For some reason, a little nervous tonight. And I was hoping the Eagles were playing tonight. Most of you guys might be gone. Probably why I was asked to speak. But, I haven't thought about one thing I was going to say today. I didn't even wake up this morning and ask God to keep me sober. You know, so one thing you're going to get from me tonight is the truth, you know. But mid through my day, I did get on my knees midway through and did ask Him. I asked Him to, you know, give me words tonight, to, especially for the new guys, that I can, you know, share my experience, strength, and hope with you. You can leave here like I did one day, thinking, you know what, maybe I can just not pick up a drink one day at a time. You know, I grew up here in Pottstown, great loving family. Never even thought about blaming them for my drinking. You know, I drank because I had fun, you know, for a very long time. People around me probably weren't having too much fun at the time, but I know I was, you know, and it's really what mattered. You know, I took up the drink like most of us, 13 years old, 7th grade summer, start off with those wine coolers, you know, someone would buy it, stick it in the cemetery. And, a lot of us in hindsight, but, man, I just remember, man, what happens if we get to that cemetery trash can and that's not there? It made me nervous, you know? And I think about it now, I said, I wonder if those buddies of mine were as nervous as me. You know, just, and I actually remember, like, digging out the trash and be like, oh, thank goodness, you know? Loved it from the start, you know? I remember the first beer I drank, you know, and, I had a six-pack, and I'm going to be honest, I think I drank three and I poured the other three down the drain. Because I wanted to tell everyone I drank all six. I was more concerned with that than what it was going to do for me. Because I had no idea what booze was going to do. I really didn't. I didn't have that big, that first drink. Like, I wasn't chasing it because I still didn't know. But I found out quickly. I did find out quickly what booze, what was going to do for me and how it was going to make me feel. We were a weekend drinker, man. If we could get it, we drank. You know, and it didn't cause me any harm. Didn't cause my parents any harm. You know, we camped out, we drank, and that was it. A lot of what I share, it comes in hindsight, not realizing that early in my, drinking career when I was 16, 17, that the booze had a hold on me. You know, I can remember being at parties in O.J. Roberts and that booze started running out. I didn't know that I was noticing that, but I would notice the booze was running out, and we had to do something about it. And convincing guys to take me back to somewhere else, and I was filling up, 5 gallon buckets of beer just to take back, just in the event if it ran out, you know. And looking back, learning a little bit about alcohol, I realized it had a hold on me back then. Like I said, I came from a good family. I was an athlete. I did well in school. I was the, there was a lot of things happening in my life that put myself on a pedestal, I captained the basketball team, I captained the football team, and that stuff just built me up, which really is what took me down at the end. I really thought at the end of my drinking that I was like the Truman Show, that my life was so great that there actually was a camera up in the sky looking down, filming this thing. And that's how crazy I got at the end. I mean, I really look up there and say, man, this is going to be one hell of a movie, isn't it? You know? And people in my life are saying, man, they're going to write a movie about your, write a book about your life. You know, because when I drank, like most of you know, man, some crazy stuff happened. Some crazy escapades, and I used that to build my ego up, whether it was, the sex, the fights, all that stuff, man, just I used to build me up. And I love telling the stories, man. And trust me, that story got a lot bigger, a lot bigger. But again, we came from a good family, and, I had the parents that were there for absolutely everything. Everything. Never missed an athletic contest. Didn't have the financial means to get the things I wanted, but they produced. They just gave. I was a spoiled brat. My mom made my bed until I was like 26. And my wife won't tolerate it. My wife's got my 4-year-old making her bed. Trust me. And a little bit about me. I am married. I have four beautiful children. We are happily married. So she tells me. And it's all a result of AA. But, I had an opportunity. I went to this Hill School, the prep school up there. And yeah, rubbing elbows with the big, now is the big wig, you know, rubbing elbows with Donald Trump Jr. and all that. And we come from humble means, so it was a good opportunity for me. And I tell you, my drinking really took off. And it was bad there. You know, I trust me, it was bad there. You know, I got pulled over drunk on a Sunday one time at the Hill School. And they pulled some, chains, and I never got charged with it. You know, I was in a blackout, running over mailboxes, turf and fields, you know, the fun stuff. And whatever they did, you know, I got away with it, didn't get punched, didn't get arrested. And my life was like that. And I know I'm jumping around here, but in my high school yearbook, you know, I wanted to be voted the best looking, the best athlete. I wasn't. I was voted the guy that got away with the most. You know, and in my story you'll find out that came back. That comes up again at the end. You know, the guy got away with the most, and so I was at the Hill School and got a scholarship to play football at Bucknell. And again, that just built me up. You know, I remember calling the people I graduated with that went to school right out of high school because they were good enough to. That I was calling them, I'm going to Bucknell. Look at me. You know, what school are you at? Because Bucknell is like a pretty big academic institution. I was there because of football, and I didn't last one semester. You know, I went to Bucknell, and I was just throwing them back. You know, I was, you know, Sunday night, Monday night football, Tuesday night some frat was having something, and I just, you know, continued to drink, and I started getting in, you know, this is when the trouble started. I'd get in fights, and up there, you know, that's not like a thug school. You know, that's not a state university. They didn't appreciate that. You know, within a couple of weeks of being at Bucknell, I wasn't even allowed to be on campus, which is not normal, you know. They would actually bust me in for football games, and then I had to go back off. You know, and I could be on campus Monday through Friday, but I had to leave at like 6 o'clock, you know, and this was, I was 19 years old at the time, you know, turning 20, so I was an old freshman, and it was getting nuts up there. The football staff knew I had a problem because I wasn't going to classes, you know, the 9 o'clock classes, 10 o'clock classes, they were out, just wasn't waking up till noon. You know, then I got into the trouble, and then the first weekend I was allowed back on campus, it was the last time I was allowed back on campus. You know, it was a nice excursion that night. I was in a blackout. Big fight started, you know. I didn't fare very well in it, I can tell you that. Didn't fare well in many fights. And all I know is I got called in on a Sunday to the president's office, and he said, "You're no longer a member of this institution." And you know, going into that meeting, man, everybody told me, I was in a complete blackout. Blame it on the booze. Let them know you're messed up. And I could not do it. At 20 years old, you know, there was no way I was going to blame it on booze, because then we knew what the problem was, and then we knew what the solution was. What they thought what the solution was, just don't drink. You know, we know how that works. But I was willing to give all that away. Go back, put my tail between my legs, come back here, go to community college. Not to blame it on booze. And I'm telling you, I have people begging me, athletic director, football, you know, just tell me you're in a blackout. They'll understand, you know. Maybe they'll, you know, not throw you out. I couldn't do it, man. There was no way. I called mom and dad and said, "Hey, you got to come pick me up. I got like 4 hours to get off campus." So that's 20. I didn't stop drinking until I was 29. You know, and those next 9 years were rough. And I dusted myself off, per se, you know, got back in. I went to Bloomsburg University. I went to the following fall, and I, you know, played football for them. And see some thumbs up out there. That's good. And listen, Bloomsburg was crazy too, man. Same old stuff. I was there 2.5 years, and they were, you know, I was in some dean's offices there too. I just didn't understand. Every time I got drunk, something crazy had to happen. I didn't always get caught, but it was always nuts. I'd wait, you know, during the football season, when Saturday game came, I was too beat up. I said, "How the hell am I going to go play a football game? You know what I just did Monday through Friday, you know?" You know, my class attendance was a batting average. I figured if I can make 300 on my classes, I was doing good, you know, and I compared it to, you know, professional baseball guys. And listen, just had fun, man. My locker was Banaca, you know, Advil, and eye drops. That was it, you know. The first AA meetings I ever went to were in Bloomsburg. You know, they got some rough crowds out there. My head coach made me go. It wasn't like I had no choice in the matter, just because of my drinking. And, you know, so I remember going, I think, two meetings. I can't remember much of them all because I was just focused on, as soon as I get out of here, I want to get drunk. I started becoming almost like a daily drinker up there. You know, I didn't want to miss a party. Did not want to miss it, you know. And I was at, again, I can still tell you my schedule. We had Monday night football, Tuesday night at Lemons, which was Dollar Pitchers. Wednesday night, good old days, all you could eat and drink for like $10. Thursday night, started my weekend at Hess's, you know, and then Friday, and then you go. And then all of a sudden it was Sunday, and both my roommates were from Sheffield, England, so they introduced me to the Sunday social, so my week was packed, you know. And I was, and that's what happened, man, and I drank. I can remember when I found the morning drink. I was at Bloomsburg. Never felt so bad in my life, hungover. Never this bad. And I put a beer into me in that morning. It went away. And that was a bad day because I never forgot that. And that stayed with me until I put down a drink. I got injured and I left Bloomsburg and went to Westchester. And now it's bad because now I'm commuting from Pottstown to Westchester down Route 100 and drinking like I was. You know, and I wish, like, today I was on that road and I didn't realize I'm a bad driver sober, because they got those little ruts now they put on the road, and I'm like, sober. I wish I had them back then, because I ended up on some of those weeds, you know, on those trips up. But that was crazy. And I had escapades, you know, trying to go find a girl, you know, climbing in the wrong house and stuff. The stuff you see in the newspaper, where guys are getting charged and all that stuff, that was me. I go in the house because I thought that was her window, and dudes are freaking, you know. Just, it was a nightmare, man. I'll tell you, a nightmare. But, you know, I was the guy who got away with the most, and I got away with it, you know. I graduated from Westchester to become a phys ed teacher. I mean, you know, this is what we do, and it's fun. You know, my ego is so big. You know, but I had this inferiority thing. I wanted you to believe I was this big tough guy, but I was scared to death to fight you until I got enough in me, you know. And I can remember at graduation, I saw a list of names, and next time my name it said cum laude. And then that's pretty good. I know it's good, but I knew there was something better. I knew there was something better than cum laude. And I'm looking down and it said Magnus. So I grabbed this pen and I go down there. My name's Anthony, and I go Magna in front of the cum laude, you know. And when they, son of a bitch, when they read my name, you know, Anthony Doyle, Magna cum laude, yes, you know. That's like graduating like a 3.8 and above, you know. And I'm like, I hope the whole world heard that, you know. And that's how I was living my life, man. I wanted the whole world to know who I was. You know, it's like I wanted to go over Niagara Falls in a barrel and survive, just so I could make the USA Today or something. You know, I didn't know what it was. Why did I need that? I wanted to save someone from a burning building. Let me catch someone jumping out of a sky. Something. I needed something. You know, and I think what it was, I wasn't okay with me. You know, and I just kept drinking, and I didn't know why. You know, and I didn't think it was a problem the way I was drinking, and you know. Look, I graduated, you know. There's a part in the book, you know, it talks about, you know, our inability to stop. You know, no matter how great the necessity or wish, you know, I know if it's in more about alcoholism or not, but I can remember at Westchester that if I missed this class, it was finals week, if you missed it, you were done. You didn't get the credits, and that means I wouldn't graduate. And I know my mother was scared to death. The class was on a Thursday, you know, and she was scared to death because I was going out that Wednesday night. And the class was early. It was like an 8 a.m. thing. It was an adventure class. And when I read that in the book, I said, man, that was me. Because I could not drink that night. And I remember, you know, my mom was scared to death. Tad, please, 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 just take it easy tonight. Just have a couple, you know, just get home early. Fine, Mom, fine. And I remember it got to that point. I said, well, there ain't no stopping now. And 2-3 in the morning, you know, I jumped in my car and drove down to the place we had to meet and took athletic tape and wrote on my car, you know, wake me, you know. That's how because I could not drink. As big as that thing was, I mean, my future was riding on that. I'm like, just don't drink the one night. And if you're a real alcoholic, you understand that, man. My inability to stop, no matter how great the necessity or wish, man. I had more reasons not to drink that night than anybody, you know, I can imagine. And I could not do it. My mom couldn't keep me sober that night. I thought maybe I'd take it easy. I had no idea what alcohol could do, you know, what it was doing. You know, I had no idea about the allergy, the obsession of the mind. Never knew it. No one ever told me. You know, until I came to AA. Graduated, you know, got a job, and the drinking got bad. I thought I passed down my first year, and you know, still having, you know, was I, you know, still having fun, but still I was pretty old when I graduated. You know, I'd be staying at a buddy's house and have to teach the next day, and my parents would show up there. It, like, it's embarrassing to me now, like, to wake me up. And I was in my, you know, mid to late 20s. It's not normal. You know, it's not normal drinking. And not caring, you know, throwing up in classrooms, you know, when I was teaching, and, you know, just couldn't stop drinking. And it got worse. You know, it's a progressive disease, and, you know, I took a job in North Jersey. That didn't pan out too well. I was up there coaching football and sleeping on a football field house just to save money to drink, you know, instead of getting an apartment. And they didn't find, I was on an air mattress, and they didn't find it too attractive, to, you know, the principals up there, that I was just getting, you know, sleeping there and bragging about it, you know, loose lips, just bragging about this, getting up, walking to school, you know, and they didn't have it. And somehow, you know, 2 months there, they let me go. And understand now, and it was all their fault, you know, all their fault. I ended up in Philadelphia, because they'll hire anyone, you know. And some of you can get jobs, but yeah, I ended up in Philadelphia, down in, like, right outside Port Richmond, and fought and drank, you know. And I'll tell you what, man, that first summer I had off was a losing, man. It was my wife was working. She wasn't my wife at the time. She was working third shift. She had a kid from a previous marriage. She was probably four. You know, his father, not in his life, and I couldn't wait for her, you know, to go to work, because then I could drink the way I wanted to. You know, when she left at like 7 o'clock, man, it was like, you know, the weight of the world came off my shoulders. And when I had that summer off, and I didn't have to work, and I was getting a paycheck. We know people like that, but it was off. I was on. I was drinking morning, noon, and night. And it was so hard to control the drinking then. Let her be comfortable enough to go to work that I just had to, like, keep, you know, that maintenance during the day, you know. And I'm okay. And, you know, she really started getting upset with the drinking. Because, you know, I can remember specifically her coming home and seeing a whole bottle of gin gone. And asking me if I drank it. And I'll be honest, I didn't know. So I did the experiment. I bought another one that night. Right? So, but yeah, I did drink it then, you know. And she wasn't happy with that. She'd come home, a bottle of gin be gone, you know, half down, and you know, whatever the apartment looked like, you know. You can, I understand now, you know, her fear, leaving her 4-year-old with me. And, you know, we started getting to the point where I started buying two bottles, because, you know, I filled one with water, and she caught that. So I'd buy two bottles, drink the one, drink half of the other, and leave it there. So when she, okay, we only drank half, which still is not normal. And, you know, we're very resourceful, you know. That's what we did. And, you know, school was starting, and that day came. And I said, well, you know, I'll slow down then. I couldn't, you know. And that's, you know, waking up. I'm one of those guys who made the worst hangovers you can imagine. You know, I know there's a lot out here, but you can drink and get up and go to work. Not me, man. My eyes are black. You can't see. My face is swollen. I reek of booze. And I, you know, and it was tough, man. That's a tough life. You know, getting up and that bell going off in the morning, like, shit. You know, and then go dealing with those kids, man. I was angry. I was definitely angry. And, you know, I got to a point in my drinking there in Philadelphia. We were living up in the Northeast where the booze would run out. And the kid's sleeping. And it's, you know, 1 a.m., 12, whatever it is. She's at work. I need booze. And I would leave. I would run and start off. I ran down to the corner store, grabbed a couple sixes, come back. And then I'd go out and stay out an hour. And then I'd be out and staying out 2 hours, you know. And here's a, and I always share this because this is how strong, you know, booze is. You know, again, I love my children to death, you know. And booze justified me going out. I would actually leave the front door cracked open, unlocked, in case there was a fire, this four-year-old might have a chance. Not don't drink, none of that stuff, you know. That's what alcohol does to me. Now, you know, if you're an alcoholic, that's what it'll do to you. You know? And the crazy thing is I'm one drink away from being that drunk again. You know? I had to get my, this is my wife now, you know, pregnant to keep her around. That was my solution. I'll get her pregnant. She can't go now. Was she going to be a single mother or two? And her bags were packed. You know? And then as soon as she had that one, I got her pregnant again. Were you going to be a single mother of three? And that's what I said to her. You know, you talk about verbal abuse, you know, living with an alcoholic. What are you going to do? Where are you going to go? Who's going to want you? And she's beautiful. You know, who's going to want you? You know, that's that alcohol thinking. Man, I was thinking about self, and you're not going to tell me how to drink. And, you know, we were living in Levittown then, you know, through that. And, you know, she's living in a nightmare, and I'm living in a nightmare. Trust me, I'm living in a nightmare. I'm teaching up in a good school district up in Hamilton, coaching, and man, waking up in the morning and having to drink Monday through Sunday and have to go to school, but I had to do it. I had to, when I woke up in the morning, I had to have six beers before I went to school. Not because I thought I was playing beer pong when I got there. And I knew the fun was done, but I woke up and I had to drink. You know, when I drank, my eyes would actually clear up. You know, I could function. I wasn't shaking. And it sucked, man. And it started driving me down, man. It really beat me up to the point where I'd given up. You know, the problem is I called mommy and daddy back in Pottstown, come down and save me. You know, human power. You know, there's one thing I've been drilled in my head by everyone I've ever worked with is no human power can relieve my alcoholism. And if you're newer in doubt, man, if you think you're alcoholic, don't leave here tonight with thinking that a human power can keep you sober. If you can, you're not an alcoholic. That's the bottom line. And yes, I called them, and like, just like my parents, 3 a.m., they come running down. You know? And you know, I was pouring these Budweisers down the drain and licking them at the same time. And, you know, I didn't know. You know, I said I'm done, you know, but I didn't want to go to, I was going to detox on my own. Not a good idea, you know. If you're a daily drinker, make sure you get some hospital attention. Just a detox, though. That's all us alcoholics need. We just need to be detoxed, and then we need to get our butt in AA. I mean, anything else. Nothing else. And I went to Living Grid Detox because I tried it on my own and almost died, you know. And this is a real important part of my story, you know. I don't know what was happening when I was detoxing, but I thought I was dying. I mean, probably having anxiety and panic attacks. My heart thought, I thought it was going to explode in my chest. We called 911. You know, the kids are there. I mean, they're little at the time, and the oldest one still remembers. But man, I was screaming at these paramedics not to let me die. You know. They threw me in, took me down to, you know, Bucks Hospital. And I literally was grabbing the doctors by the cuff because they didn't think it was as serious as I did. And I begged them not to let my heart stop. Never been that scared in my life. Never been that scared in my life. I was dying. I was going to die. And I begged these guys from the bottom of my heart not to let it happen. Now, here's the insanity. I drank again, man. I've heard so often here, you know, replay the tapes. Remember your last drink. And the big book tells us the complete opposite. My experience showed the complete opposite. It said I'm going to have a mental blank spot. I won't remember that. And I did. I came into AA after I detoxed from Living Grin. And it's in my book. I still have it. I wrote at the top, my name is Pat, I'm an alcoholic. And I put this like 90-90. And I did like one meeting, and then two meetings the next day, and then another meeting, and then it stops. Just won't drink. I don't know if they said it to me directly, but I remember them saying, if I don't pick up the first one, I can't get drunk. And I'm a smart guy, magna cum laude, and I got the diploma.
Sure.
And I said, that's it. I just won't drink. I sold it to my mom, my dad, and my Wendy, my wife. You know, I sold it to them. I said, look, I can't, won't drink. And that was it. And then 50 days came. And then just like they talk about, and I didn't know this, right in the big book, it says, I will have that mental blank spot, you know, that I'll be able to justify it. And it'll sound reasonable, and it did. I said, I'll just drink every 50 days. It'll be 7 drunks a year. And that was what happened up here. You know, they talk about the disease centering in the mind. And it made sense to me. And I even said to him, I said, Wendy, how bad could I be if I was only drunk 7 times? How much damage could I do? And I picked up a drink, you know. I picked up a 6-pack. And I went back for another one. And I didn't tell her about that one. She went up home to visit the family. And then, you know, I remember going out with the coaches. And, you know, I said, look, I'm just going to have 2 drinks. And I did. I swear to God here, I had 2 beers. Went home, high-fived her. And, you know, hey, we're going to be okay. Yay. And didn't drink. You know, and it was painful. But I waited till the next week. The football game came. We went out with the coaches. And I had 3 beers. And I got home. I lied and I said I had 2. And this guy, Adam P. from the 12 Keys, you know, said, he's like, the games are on. Now the games are on. That was just the beginning. Then it was like, okay, I buy, you know, 6-pack of near beer and a 6-pack. I would drink this one down, the real one, and then drink like 2 of them before I got into the house. I carried the thing in. Well, I smelled because I had 2 of these, you know. And then this is when, and I was teaching, I taught health, and I was teaching about this, you know, alcoholism. And I tell you what, I started getting nervous. I said, son of a gun. And then I remember I thought about the guy I got away with the most. And all of a sudden, as my drinking's going on for these 9 months, I'm like, son of a gun, man. This is the thing that's finally going to get me. Man, all my life, I got away with everything. And the one thing I couldn't live without is going to be the thing it's going to get. And I remember it. And seeing it, I saw just like that train coming down. And I'm teaching about this stuff and out of the textbook. And man, I am at the, I don't know if they had levels or something, but I'm like, I didn't want to teach about the 4th one because it was me, you know, the last one. Oh, shit, man. And I felt empty inside. Like, what am I going to do? And man, and the drinking just, it just got horrible, you know. Again, waking up in the morning, you know, my wife would hear me pop them open in the morning before school. What are you doing? You know, and that's like an embarrassing situation. Look, I just have to, I don't feel good. It's just going to make me, you know, I always say I was off. You know, this will make me okay. And she had none of that. So I would have to open these things, Milwaukee's Best, at night, open them up because she was working. And I would stick them in the kids', you know, vanity and have to drink them warm the next day. And you know, it didn't taste good. I wasn't having fun. I had a drink, man. I had to drink. And then just day after day after day, the bell would go off, and I woke up and said, man, please, not today. And I had a drink. You know? And you know, it got me to the point of that jumping off point. I couldn't stay in drinking. I couldn't stay in not drinking. And what was I to do? You know? And I wake up the next day, and then over and over, man. They talk about being in quicksand. I was there. Never so desperate and hopeless in my life, man. Never. You know? And, you know, remember, it was Easter, we were coming up, and I convinced my wife to take 2 cars. And, you know, we had 3 kids at the time, and, you know, right at that one moment, I shot off the turnpike, because I had to go drink, you know, before we got there, because everyone was going to be watching me, And that was a nightmare there, trying not to drink. You know, like, I'm going out of my gore. Then we went home, and we got home at Levittown, and she was holding the 2 kids, and, I mean, the tears were coming down her face. She knew. I mean, coming down her face, and I looked her dead in the eyes and said, look, Wen, I know you don't want to hear this, but I have to go out and drink tonight. You know, it was a Sunday night, and I said, we'll talk about it tomorrow. I said, but I have to go drink. She just, I mean, just both of us hopeless, man, just sitting there. And the next day I rolled out of bed, you know, I got on my knees and I asked God from the bottom of my heart, not mom and dad, I'm telling you, I asked God to save me, and I haven't had a drink since. Now, if there ain't some strong correlation with that, I don't know what is. And I hear that exact same story in AA over and over again. Guys have gotten on their knees and asked God to save them, and they haven't drank. You know? So I went down to the 12 Keys Club. That's where I suggested to go, man. What a great place, man. To cut my teeth is everything I needed. You know, guys like Bob C., Adam P., the old timers that you guys probably had, you know, in your home groups. It was no nonsense. You know, I went in there. They told me I just didn't have to drink one day at a time. You know, just don't drink today. And that made sense to me. Now, again, I didn't come in on any virtue. Man, I came in because what, you know, booze did to me. And I was absolutely willing to do what anyone said to me. You know, there are no musts in AA. I know, you know, if we go out there and we circle all these musts in the big book. It tells us in the 12 and 12, there are no musts. You know, but if booze does to you what it did to me, you will do whatever you have to do. You know, and the only thing that I know that works in AA is the 12 steps. You know, I try not to have a garden variety sobriety. I don't take this from this guy. Well, this guy says this. If it can't be, you know, reconciled with the big book in the book, if it's not in the 12 and 12 or the big book, it's not for me. As Bill sees it, you know, as a book I read too. Everything else other than the Bible, I'm out. I'm out. My spouse. My sponsor doesn't want it in there. He doesn't want me calling the sponsor. He tells me, he says, look, we all have the same sponsor. His name's Bill Wilson. He's wrote a lot of good stuff. He says, if your sponsor's not taking you to Bill Wilson, where's he taking you? And he said, right to a drink. You know? I've been sober 7.5 years. These last 2 years have been, you know, some awakenings. You know, some rude awakenings. You know, I had a spiritual awakening. And I've learned, and I guess one of my things, my sponsor says I have an open mind. But he's taught me so much more about life. You know, because, you know, we read the big book, you know, elimination of drinking is just the beginning. You know, I got to apply these principles, surrender to win. I did it with the drink. Can I do it with this, you know, with everything else in my life? You know? That's where my struggles, you know, will come in. And that's why I need guys like this guy Johnny in my life. He's been around for a while. He's seen a lot of stuff. He saves me a lot of pain. You know, he really does. Anyway, so I got sober at the 12 Keys, went in there, raised my hand. You know, he told me to get a sponsor, and I grabbed this guy. This guy Tommy, man, what a guy. You know, I've been blessed with people who've been in my life because one thing they told me was the truth. You know, I've never gotten anything but the truth from guys. This, you know, when I was like 30 days sober, I had lost one of my, I coached football, and we lost a kid. Tragedy. We lost a kid, and I came into the 12 Keys like, how could God do this? And he looked me dead and I said, who are you to question God's will? I said, what do you mean? And then we got talking. And he said, you mean to tell me? I guess I may have told him I wanted to drink. I didn't want to drink. I just didn't want to feel. And he said, you mean to tell me if you go home right now and one of your kids is dead, that a drink's going to make it better? He said, you better have no conditions on your sobriety. And he told me, he looked at me, he says, I'm going to tell you one thing. If I wake up without the obsession to drink, no matter what happens in my life, he goes, no matter what, my day is gravy. And last year, and I just shared this at the board town meeting, you know, it gives you kind of goosebumps. My first sponsor lost his daughter last year. She was 19 years old. If anyone has, you know, children or especially daughters, you can imagine the tragedy. There might be people out there that it's happened to. He lost her to an automobile accident. And I went down there for support, and I asked him how he's doing. This guy looked me dead in the eye and said, Tad, I woke up without the obsession to drink, you know. And I kind of get choked up. He says, I'll get through this. He's like, my day will be gravy, you know. And, man, when he said that, man, you know, it hit me. I said, man, this guy was serious all the time, man. You know, don't drink one day no matter what. You know, and that's what my sobriety is based on, no matter what happens. There is nothing in this world. I'm telling you right now, I have no conditions on my sobriety. You know, I've been through some stuff in sobriety. I've been in worse things in sobriety and outside sobriety. You know, and I just, you know, thought of a drink hasn't been there. I've been so blessed that when the shit hit the fan, I've always been driven to my knees, man. And I asked the Savior, man, just help me, man. Keep me sane. You know, keep me away from a drink. You know, how can I be in service? So, I'm going to the 12 keys. I'm getting involved. I'm washing the smoke. Look, I don't even smoke, and I wash smoke off the walls down in that place, man. Because back then, it was always a smoking meeting. And I was there, the 5:30s. And that was hectic, man. I used to the self-proclaimed busiest man in AA. I get done football practice. I had to fly down to the 12 keys for the 5:30. I get there. After that, my wife would show up. We weren't married yet, but she would show up and with the three kids in the car, and she was going to work. I take them home. Two of them are in diapers. I'm with them. Walk on the bed at night. It was tough, but I had to do it. And then I get up and go to the 6 a.m. Sunrise meeting out there in Langhorne. Now, that's crazy. You got to have a drinking problem if you get up at 5 to go to a 6 a.m. meeting. And they were so bright and cheery from Langhorne. They used to drive this car around to put the thing. I'm just going to smash it, Because one thing I failed to tell you, 12 Keys is, bottom of the barrel type, place. And my nickname was Anger Management. And I was, here comes Anger Management. You'd be angry too if you couldn't drink, And in sobriety, I start getting worse. I'm like 90 days sober, and I think I'm going to die of a heart attack. And I was hypochondriac, I'm one of those stubborn hypochondriacs out there when I was drinking. I had everything and survived it all. Never went to a doctor for a diagnosis. But I'd see something on, something about Lyme disease, I'd be like, uh-oh. Living in fear, irrational fear, checking my pulse at times. Am I having a stroke? So one thing my sponsor does tell me, especially for new guys, you come in and get sober, go get a physical right away. Because when the doctor says you're okay, you can't be making this stuff up in your head anymore, Good stuff. But so my nickname was Anger Management, and I'm like, what? I'm supposed to be getting better, and not worse. And I wasn't doing any step work, I love that first sponsor, but he wasn't a guy, wasn't pushing. But I was a guy. I'm going to ask you. I'm calling him every day. What I need to do. Somebody looked at me when I was driving to work today. He said, "Stop looking at the size of your car." I said, "Oh, okay." I took different ways home from work. I did that. I put the shoes underneath the bed. They were suggested because I was scared to death if I didn't pray in the morning. Absolutely scared to death. I would stop at a porta potty in Trenton because I was afraid I was going to, afraid I was going to drink if I didn't. All because of what booze did to me, man. I wasn't in me. But anyway, so I knew I was done drinking. I knew I was powerless. I was sold on that idea. I know when I was praying, it didn't seem like much was going on when I was praying. It really felt like the words were sitting in my Levittown rancher there. And I told that to my sponsor, so he had me do an exercise. It's not the big book, it's not anything, but I wrote down on a piece of paper who I wanted my God to be. Now, I went to Catholic school for about 5 years. I missed the boat, and it was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. I didn't know anything about God. I didn't know anything about Jesus. I didn't know anything. So when I came into AA, I really didn't have, I was just, hey, here I am. Teach me. So we talk, we obviously talked to that, that punishing, revengeful God. It doesn't exist, That's not who He is. He's a loving, caring God. And I did a simple exercise, wrote it down, threw it away, and from that moment on, I'm telling you, when I prayed, there was a connection. I actually felt like someone was listening. And it was vital, in my recovery. I started hearing these people talk about the third step. And now, informally, I felt like I came in on the third step, I got on my knees and asked God to save me, I was there. But I kept hearing people with the keys talking about this formal third step. Formal third step. And I'm like, uh-oh, I'm missing something, And again, so I would just go in the big book and I read it. Now, this is going to surprise some people, right, tonight. I know, because it surprised my sponsors. We've been doing it 32 years. The first person it tells you to take that thing with, it says your wife. Man. It's the first person it lists on there. Am I even my sponsor? He says, no. I said, yeah. That's who it tells you. So I didn't know anything else, so I took this, and it was a humbling experience for me. I went home, and I asked my wife, I said, look, I got to take this third step. And it told me I should take it with you, you know? She was probably nervous, too. And I remember sitting, we got on our knees, and that was tough for me, you know, not by myself, but next to somebody else. Now, even today, I'll tell you, like, when I'm praying, and I hear her come up the steps, I got to calm myself. Don't jump up. It's okay. You know? It's okay. You know, sometimes I still do. You know, this guy Bob Darrow made me laugh one time. He said he used to, you know, he'd stuff a towel underneath the bathroom door so no one could see him praying. Like, they're actually going to look down and, I gotcha! But that's how I was. I understand that. And it's okay. I want my kids, you know, my kids come in. It's okay for them to see, you know, Romaine on their knees. And why? There was a woman I had done a third step with. And I didn't realize the effect it had on her. She had come through some abusive relationships and stuff, and she liked what we were saying, me and this other guy, and you know, it was two of us. One dude was a nut, but we were at the sober house, and we went through the first three steps, and when she saw me, I didn't realize, I got on my knees and did the third step with her, and she shared this at a meeting that when she saw a grown man on his knees, it, like that prejudice she had about men was gone, you know, and it propelled her into doing the rest. She's like, this shit must work, you know? And I remember it was a moment too. I think I wasn't doing enough service work. You know, I was like, man, I need to do something. And then I hear her share at this meeting. I'm like, oh, you know. So we don't, you know, we never know who we're affecting. You know, I just know if we stay on this course, we will affect people, whether we know it or not. But now, so you know, I did this third step with my wife, and of course, man, I couldn't get it right the first time. You know. I'm messing the words up. I'm opening up the book again, and you know we're down there for longer than we had to be. You know, but again, it was a humbling thing. It was some humility involved, and you know I held we held hands, and that was my third step. And you know we know what comes after that. And again, I didn't have a guy that says, okay, next we launched out on course. My guy didn't tell me that. I got sicker and angrier, and people called me anger management. And I'm like, what do I have to do? You know? And then I finally said, well, what about the fourth step? You know? And that's what I proceeded to do. You know, I put it down on paper. And I can tell you, for me, my experience with the fourth step was huge because, you know, it says anger is going to kill us. And when I started writing down those resentments, I'm telling you, man, three quarters of them were gone after I put them down on paper. They were silly, you know. All this stuff, and this is why my sponsor, and I don't do it very well, always tells me to put it down on paper. We make lists in AA, and yet I get through the steps and I stop making lists. You know, and I should be doing it with the 10 steps. I should be making the list. Why? Because when I put it down on paper, it's black and white. It's not up here. Because up here I can, you know, really change, you know, pull it, distort it. And I need to go, you know, make that list and not keep it to myself. I gotta share it with, you know, with a third party. It doesn't have to be my spot. I just need somebody else. So one other person. And always tells me too, it can't just be you and God. It can't just be you. We know that's bad. It can't just be you and God. He says every stool's gotta have three legs, you know? It can have four, it can have five, it's gotta have three, it has two, it's gonna fall. And it makes sense to me. Because I'm going to tell you, I call guys with much less time than me, and when I throw stuff at them, and when I hear their, well, this is how it seems to me, I'm like, oh man, I never even thought that. Yeah, you're right. Wow. But anyway, so, you know, when I made this resentment list, they just started going, man. And my heart, I wasn't scared of the heart attack anymore. You know, when I wrote them out, they just, man, what is that all about? Ain't no big deal. And I'll start crossing them off. No, don't cross them off. Just, you know, keep them down there. Then I did the other list, you know. Did the fears and the, you know, the sex conduct. And then I had a wild experience with the fifth, you know. I'm coming up on time here. But, you know, I scheduled my appointment in the 12 Keys basement, you know, like everybody, and to do the fifth step with my sponsor. And we met, and he was going through some stuff. You know, some of his relationships weren't going so hot. And he was jammed up. And when we got down to do the step, I started reading down my resentments, and he kind of like grabbed the paper and said, "All right, listen, so you're a liar, you're a cheater, and you're a thief, you know? Aren't we all?" And that was it. And I'm like, you know, like crickets, yeah. Huh? And then I thought the 12 keys had control of my sobriety. I was still a little nut. And I walked up the steps, and as soon as I get to the top, he said, "Hey, you want to speak?" I said, "No, oh, this is all planned. Okay, I got it. Yeah, yeah, sure." I got there and lied my balls off. I lied. I said, "Oh man, I had this huge thing happen to me down there, you know? Did you feel it?" And I was dying. I mean, literally dying, man. You talk about the things being right here, I know exactly what they meant. I'm sitting in AA, like, "Oh my God, what am I going to do?" I'm asking women, I'm asking people. I said, "Oh, this is what happened. What do I do? Blah, 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 blah." You know, they kept on telling me about this guy, Danny. "You got to meet this guy, you know, they call him Spiritual Dan." And it just so happens, I was sitting in a meeting, and I'm looking around, and I said, "Someone's going to hear this fifth step." And I didn't know many people in there. Most people I knew were just the women at the time because they hit the 5:30. And I said, "I can't believe this. So I'm going to have to tell one of these women all this stuff." But absolutely guarantee someone was leaving that night with that fifth step. Well, don't you know, they introduced a speaker. It was Dan. What step? Step 5. And I went right up to the guy, man. I'm telling you, this guy never knew me, never met me. I went up, I said, "Hey, you got time for a fifth step? You know, what are you doing tonight?" You know, and without hesitation, I'm telling you, without hesitation, the guy, you know, he conceded and said, "Yeah, absolutely." And we went down, and you know, and I thought, you know, I was able to get it out, you know, and he gave me some guidance and direction, and kind of, you know, pointed me to, you know, why I was the way I was. And I went home, and you know, like the big book says, and I got down to my bathroom, I read the sixth step there, and then I did the seventh step prayer. And I always laugh because like there was like this bright light above my head, and like my head slowly kept on coming up, and I'm like, maybe it's the vanity light, you know? Like, "No, don't open your eyes," you know. But that was that, and then, you know, and I continued through these steps. Now I had some, I had one of those like bright flash, you know, spiritual awakenings about right before I was 90 days sober, you know, and I always you know, joke. You know, people are scared to say that. It means, I'm like, "No, it's what happened to me, you know." And it's not, it doesn't happen to many of us, you know. And you know, most of them are the education I talked about. But man, I had something happen. I always tell people, you can call and ask my wife because she was right next to me, man. She was there. But something happened, man. It happened. I'll tell you that, you know, without getting into the whole thing, and I don't have to because even Bill didn't want to like exaggerate what his thing was because he, but all I know is that when it was done, I had the overwhelming feeling that I never had to hurt another human being as long as I didn't pick up a drink. Man, I went through this experience, man, a spiritual experience like I've never, and I haven't had since. And and then I went on with my sobriety, you know. I left teaching, you know, I did another career that almost drove me to a drink. I was doing this work, and you know, the dishonesty part involved in it, and just going, like it was my primary focus, making a lot of money. And I got to a point, you know, that they say, you know, the only thing between you and a drink's God. I was driving around Jersey, and there it hit me. I said, "Son of a gun, here it is." God, what am I going? And I started getting the panic attacks, anxiety. My heart's going to stop. Do I call 911? And I didn't know what to do. But I remember that they said that. The only thing between you and a drink will be God. You know, no one picked up the phone. And, you know, so I started driving looking for a church, you know, and found a Catholic church. There was no one there. Got back in the car and driving down some old road. And all of a sudden I see a Baptist church up the street. It was up a long dirt road. Went up there. I was banging on the door. Banging on the door. There's one car there, and I started walking away, and the door opened, and it was this black minister. He said, "Son, can I help you?" And I went in there, and the people, as I stand here, I'm telling you, I don't know if I told him anything. All I know is he took me into a back prayer room. We got on our knees, and this gentleman held me, and he prayed to God, and whatever he was saying, it was like instantaneous healed. The tears were pouring down my face, and he was saying everything he had, like it was like perfect. And I mean, I walked out of there a free man again. I said, "Oh, yeah. Man. Wow. That's neat. That's neat stuff, man. That's the stuff that, you know, that happens in AA." You know, nowadays, you know, Now, I've made a bunch of amends. I still have some, you know, obviously those to go. I try to live a principled life, you know, and fall short, you know. Try to correct my wrongs. Try to be a good husband, a good father, you know, and not drink. You know, I know if I pick up a drink, all that stuff's gone, you know. My focus hasn't been on a drink in a long time. My focus now is at step 11 and at step 12, you know. You know, I had a gentleman introduce me to Christ not too long ago, and this guy's out there, man. And I always tell my, you know, guy sponsor, I said, my heart's still there because he's the first guy introducing me to Jesus, you know, and because I never had that in my life, you know. And then recently, probably a year ago, my sponsor told me, we were talking about the 11th step. And he says, well, if you're going to improve a relationship with God, don't you think you better find out who He is? I said, well, how do I do that? New Testament. Then he took the same principles that we tell young guys in AA, you know, and young women, keep it simple. Just read Sermon on the Mount. And I'm going to tell you, when I read Sermon on the Mount, I had an understanding of God that I never had before. There's one that has all power. Right? That one is God. You know? No false God will keep me sober. In fact, no false God will keep any alcoholic sober. I don't use the word resentful, but when I hear people say, well, make the doorknob or make the chair, and I know, but it's out there. You know? Look, it tells us there is one. You know? Now, my relationship with God has changed from the, you know, beginning till now. But I'm telling you, when I read Sermon on the Mount, man, I said, holy cow, that's Him? And he said, yeah. I said, man, keep it simple. That's all I had to do was read Sermon on the Mount. And then I went from there. You know? And I got a little further. And I have a guy I sponsor now that's picked it up. And he's like, that's Him? I said, yeah. That's our Father in Heaven. You know? And it really gave me that relationship, you know, like with me, with my son, is like God with me. You know, I said, oh my, I never had that right. No one ever told me. AA showed me though, you know. That's the beauty of this program. You know, I think the New Testament's huge. I think it should be a part, you know. I know it's helped me, man, tremendously. You know, tremendously. You know, try to wake up every day and ask God to give me another day sober. And I'm sitting up here. Some days I don't. Some days it's on my, you know, my ride in. And that bothers me because I'm like, that should be, you know, when I wake up, that should be my first thought. It really should. So I get caught up in life, you know. Trying to find balance in AA. You know, when I was out there, it was black and white. And then I come in AA and it's still black and white. And I need it, you know, it has to be in the middle somewhere, you know. My attendance to meetings, you know, it used to be extreme. And it went to the other extreme. Now it's a balance, you know. You know, regular attendance, not constant attendance, I'm told. You know, it makes sense to me. You know, I know things today, they don't have to be right or wrong. You know, I don't know if it's the best answer. You know, I mean, that's my choice. It's the best answer. I don't know if it's the right or it's wrong. It's the best. Oh, it's the right thing to do, the wrong thing to do, but right now it's the best thing to do. You know. But I do know, without God, I'm telling you, I'm done. It might not be this week, next month, but I absolutely would put a drink in this body because I would go insane. You know, I heard a guy share at a meeting that, you know, he picked up a drink and went insane. I'll go insane and then pick up a drink. You know, knowing everything that happens to me when I pick up a drink, leaving my baby girl in bathtubs. You know, that's the stuff. One drink away from being a drunk. You know. The hope is, you know, that if I follow 12 steps, continue to take personal inventory, get a God in my life, and help another alcoholic, man, I never have to pick up another drink. You know, I just got to do it one day at a time. You know, it works for me. I see it work in people's lives. You know, my biggest problem today is just people attacking me. And I understand it because the Bible says it's going to happen. You know, in His name, is they don't like the God stuff. Yeah. Well, guess what? Go pick up a drink. You know, you'll be crawling back to God real quick. I know that. And it tells us in the big book. You know, it tells us that too. And that's why I tell people, go drink again. And it's okay. I understand. Look, we understand. You know, and I don't, you know, we don't want to drive the God thing down people's throat, but if you're as serious as alcoholic as I was, you know, you'll do what it takes, you know. And it tells us that's what it takes. You know, there's one that has all power, that one's God. Hope you all find him. That's it. Thanks.